Hi everyone, this is Chen Xing and you're listening to Cha Tea Circle. In the audio essay that follows, my narration is interspersed with sound clips recorded during multiple visits to various Buddhist temples in the Merrimack Valley of Massachusetts between March 2022 and May 2024. To learn more about listening to the Buddhists in our backyard, visit www.l2bb.org. I can think of two instances when social media radically changed my life. In 2021, I received a Twitter message from a high school teacher 12 days after the publication of my first book, Be the Refuge, Raising the Voices of Asian American Buddhists. In 2007, I sent a Facebook message to a college classmate. That classmate, Trent, is now my husband. The high school teacher, Andy, has become a close collaborator and dear friend. The three of us, along with Andy's spouse and two young children, would participate in a refuge-taking ceremony together at Chua Tung Van Temple in Lowell, Massachusetts, 3 years and 3 months after Andy's message. This audio essay tells the story of how a Twitter DM led to a project that would challenge and change our methods of learning, our approaches to teaching, and our understandings of Buddhism. A life-changing, refuge-making project called Listening to the Buddhists in Our Backyard. In February 2021, during the peak of the U.S. COVID-19 pandemic, I receive a message on my largely neglected Twitter account.
My name is Andy Huzio, and I teach philosophy and religious studies at Phillips Academy, a high school in Andover, Massachusetts. Currently, I'm teaching an Asian religions course to a group of 10th graders. We just began our study of Buddhism last week, and we'll engage with it for the next month until the end of our term. I will assign part of your book for sure.
Andy invites me to speak with his students who are zooming in from all over the globe. Hong Kong, Shanghai, Seoul, New Jersey, Massachusetts, California, and elsewhere.
I realize Twitter DMs are not the ideal place for such exchanges, so please feel free to email me. Thank you so much for your consideration, and congratulations again on the publication of your book. Warmly, Andy.
From the first interview I conducted, out of 89 total, until the book's publication, it took Be the Refuge almost a decade to make its way into the world. During that time, I hoped that Be the Refuge might someday be read on college campuses, but never imagined it would resonate in high school classrooms. Andy's 10th graders show me the limits of my imagination. I'm wowed to see high school students from around the world engaging so energetically with the themes in Be the Refuge. Our conversation covers Buddhist teachings, race and religion, ecological justice, writing as spiritual practice, and the sharing of merit. In the fall of 2021, Andy sends a follow-up email.
I'm writing to see if you might be interested in working with some Andover students again. This time, the project would potentially be a bit longer term. This spring, I'll be working with a group of teachers and 22 seniors in an experimental school within a school at Andover. The students will drop all their typical classes and instead work only on interdisciplinary projects with the faculty and each other. Students are able to spend significant time off campus, in nature, and in deep work because they are freed from the 45-minute, five-class schedule of high school. My hope is to work with a group of students on a project that would be deeply inspired by your work and Be the Refuge. In particular, I want to engage the students with a set of questions. Who are the Buddhists in Boston? What are their voices? What can we learn about Buddhism and Boston from this inquiry? This kind of learning is really only possible in this experimental schedule. Students could visit Dharma centers and temples, interview a range of people, and come to an understanding of the tradition that is not limited to a discussion of texts and artwork in classrooms.
I'm intrigued. The project you're proposing sounds meaningful and fun, I write back. I would be excited to see how I could support the students' research and learning, though I suspect I would learn more from them than they would from me. I couldn't have known how true that prediction would be, and how much all of us would learn from the Buddhists we'd be meeting beyond the classroom walls. Though based in California at the time, Trent and I have plans to be in Massachusetts right before spring term to lead Story and Song, a 4-day retreat focused on Cambodian Buddhist chant and storytelling. We decide to stay in Massachusetts for a few extra days after Story and Song to check out some Boston-area Buddhist temples and to ask if they'd be open to having high school students visit next month. I'd lived for a few months in Somerville right after college, so I know of a few Buddhist temples and meditation centers in Boston and nearby Cambridge. But I'd never been to Andover, which Google Maps tells me is 40 minutes north of Boston, if I'm lucky enough to avoid traffic. Another Google Maps search reveals a dozen Buddhist temples within a half-hour drive from Phillips Andover, including a Chinese temple, a Thai temple, and multiple Cambodian, Lao, and Vietnamese temples. Andy, who has taught religion and philosophy at Andover for a dozen years, is just as surprised as I am. We won't need to sit in traffic for hours. The closest Buddhist temple is 10 minutes from school. Places to learn more about Buddhism are all around us in the Merrimack Valley. A new name for our project is born. Listening to the Buddhists in Our Backyard, or L2BB for short. Strangers come to feel like kin? I've been asking this question for as long as I can remember. I arrived in the U.S. as a young child in the early 90s. Except for my parents, all my family remained in China. If I limit my definition of kinship to blood relatives I see on a regular basis, I won't experience much of it in this lifetime. After 4 days, the intergenerational group of people at Story and Song come to feel like kin. It's hard not to feel a sense of relatedness after chanting and eating and sharing stories together in a sacred setting. Among the group members are Kim and Priscilla, a mother-daughter pair who signed up for the retreat together and whose palpable love for each other moves many of us to tears. Priscilla proudly identifies as a Kampuchea Krom American woman. Her mother, Kim, is a regular at several Cambodian and Vietnamese Buddhist temples in the Merrimack Valley. In this spirit of connecting across cultures, traditions, and nationalities, and with Kim's generous introduction to several local temples, Trent and I spend 3 days in our rental car traversing the snowy roads connecting Andover with Lawrence, Haverhill, Lowell, North Chelmsford, and Billerica. Between Trent's Khmer, Thai, Lao, and Vietnamese, and my Chinese, were able to explain L2BB to someone at each of the 10 temples we visit. 100% of the temples warmly welcome the high school students. We have to opt out of visiting the remaining temples because the students are already booked up with invitations across 8 consecutive days. The 6 high school seniors of L2BB's inaugural cohort are nervous about embarking on 8 straight days of temple visits. Spring term has just started. None of them know much about Buddhism. Freed from their usual schedule of 50-minute classes, the 10 weeks ahead are full of possibility and uncertainty. How long will we spend at the temples? What will we be doing? How should we behave? What if we make fools of ourselves? As they grapple with these questions, the students come up with a guiding principle that remains written in pink marker on the glass whiteboard in Andy's office at the Tang Institute 3 years later. Group norms. Be comfortable saying, "I don't know." We don't know that our first temple visit will last more than 2 hours. Arriving at Chùa Tùng Văn, a Vietnamese Buddhist temple in Lowell established in 2010, Dr. Tam Tran, the founder of the temple's youth group, greets us with a warm smile and ushers us in from the cold. We take off our shoes and hang up our coats.
I am Tam Tran. I am the director of Buddhist Youth Education at Tùng Văn Buddhist Temple, a Vietnamese Buddhist temple in Lowell, Massachusetts.
The students don't know how to bow or meditate, but Tam, as she insists we call her, guides us in both. Her patience, friendliness, and care puts us all at ease. As they relax into not knowing, the students allow themselves to ask about anything and everything, from the statues to the colors to the snacks. When they ask how the drum and bell are used, the abbot of the temple, Venerable Thich Thanh Hy, whom we address as Thầy, demonstrates for us. When our students notice a container of sayings that look like fortunes, Tam translates one of the New Year's blessings on the spot. The message seems to hit home.
Vô minh, tu đà hoàng thánh vị, bằng tụng vạn lời kinh. You have the great peace. Right? When you have peace inside the world, you're gonna be peace, you're gonna be at peace as well. So if you nurture the inner peace and control your anger, you can overcome your ignorance, you know, and you get understanding, you get the, you know, the insight. So by that way, you can attend your inner happiness and get a lot of accomplishment, and it is as worth as chanting millions of sutras, you know, like that merit, the merit of nurturing inner peace and control your anger. Mm-hmm. And then you can get the insight of that, you know.
The next day, we spend another 2+ hours at American Wisdom Association in Billerica. Established in 2013, AWA is also known by its Chinese name of Boreisi. Our feet creak against the wood floorboards as we admire the 3 magnificent Buddhas on the elaborate altar, modeled after Tang Dynasty dry lacquer statues. After bowing and offering incense, we sit in rapt attention as one of the resident monastics, the formidable Venerable Man Zong, answers our questions with vivid stories and lively explanations. Those of us who speak Mandarin interpret for the rest of the L2BB team. On the third day, we spend nearly 3 hours at Wat Boston Buddha Vararam in Bedford, founded in 1998 as the first Thai temple in Massachusetts. Once more, we meet an unforgettable Buddhist woman whose uncensored humor and unabashed hugs make us feel like we're family. Amy has been an integral part of the temple pretty much from its inception over 2 decades ago. It's hard to imagine the community functioning without her forceful presence and immense labor. She leads us to the main hall where we make prostrations and offerings, then shows us the upstairs room with the King Bhumibol posters, where we take a group photo in front of the seated Buddha statue. Impervious to the biting wind, Amy gives us a tour of the temple grounds. We stop in front of a reclining Buddha statue that was donated to the temple.
Out of, you know, granite. The lady, she married guy from here to New Hampshire. So he don't know it is a Buddhist, but light out Buddhist. He put in the garden on the floor.
This inauspicious placement started causing problems for the Thai woman who owned the statue. She was plagued with illness and bad dreams.
And then one day, she dreamed that you have to do something about. So she came here. So she said, can I say, yeah, you're not supposed. First of all, you don't put Buddha on the floor. You walk over. She said, yeah, I have bad dream every day. They tell me to get. So, and I'm here, so I clean it. You know, it's green, but you put it on, you know, the garden. So this one, they donated for us too. That one belonged to a Thai guy who moved back to Thailand. So he gave all the donations to us.
The next day, we continue delving into Theravada Buddhism at 2 Cambodian temples in North Chelmsford, Tri Ratnaram, founded in 1985, and Wat Samaki Santikaram, established in 2014. The resident monks at both Wats graciously answer our many questions, weaving Dharma lessons into their responses.
So it is the 3 basics of Buddhism. First, it's not to cultivate unwholesome. Second is to minimize, because we are a human being, you know, we have mistake, but we have to minimize it, to minimize the mistake we have. And the last one, to purify one's mind, or we can say that being a mindfulness.
The remaining 8 days fly by. We meet the community of Vietnamese nuns at Dinh Vien An Pagoda in Haverhill and a dynamic young monk at Lumbini Buddhist Temple in Lawrence. Beyond the Merrimack Valley, we spend time at Harvard Divinity School, the Pluralism Project, the Cambridge Insight Meditation Center, the Kurukula Center for Tibetan Buddhist Studies, and even the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, where a Guanyin chant plays in front of a stunning Song Dynasty sculpture of the Bodhisattva of Compassion. After each visit, the 6 students and Andy and I debrief as a group, feeling like an 8-headed anthropologist. Our animated conversations at local cafes and back at school last almost as long as the temple visits. There is so much to remember, wonder about, and follow up on. By design, no one receives a grade for their participation in L2BB. As the recipients of so much generosity over the past 8 days, the students want to give back in some way. Citing a concept they learned from the Divinity students, relational accountability, they vow to share their learning with a public audience at the end of the term, less than 2 months away. But how to get there? The prospect is daunting. What our students have now is a mountain of notes, photos, sketches, and voice recordings. It has been overwhelming to visit so many temples in such a short period of time. How can they organize their thinking and conduct further research? What will be a meaningful way to share their learning? It would have been easy to stick to the familiar, write a research paper for the teacher that would be grading them. But nobody in L2BB is getting a grade, and producing a research paper for an audience of one is hardly a rousing embodiment of relational accountability. How they process the mountain of notes and journey past that period of overwhelm is a story the students end up telling at the end of the spring term to an audience of over 100 people during the online conference and in-person symposium that they organize and host. By then, they've taken the initiative to create temple profiles for the Pluralism Project, blog posts for the Tang Institute and Buddhist Door Global, and even a website for L2BB, using tech and design skills that Andy and I totally lack. They've interviewed scholars and local temple leaders, participated in temple services and meditation sessions, played games with Buddhist youth members, and delved into research topics inspired by their temple visits. The students share their learning with poise and humility. They've spent many hours preparing for and refining their presentations, and they also know that learning about Buddhism is an endeavor of countless hours over the span of a lifetime, even multiple lifetimes. There was no need to bluff their way into impressing the professors, K-12 educators, journalists, school administrators, monastics, youth group members, and other honored guests who showed up for the conference and symposium. Far more important than the urge to impress is the desire to connect, to sow the seeds of generosity, gratitude, compassion, and wisdom, the fruits of which our L2BB octet had enjoyed in plenitude all spring.
And echoing the previous reflections surrounding community and generosity, I was particularly struck by the kindness that I consistently experienced at each of the temples, which contrasts greatly with the more competitive and individualistic culture I often experience with my peers at Andover. During Thai New Year at Boston Buddha Varam Temple, the large crowd gathered that day formed a massive circle directly outside the main hall, where the monks walked around with their elms bowls to collect sustenance. We brought fruit and packaged ramen noodles to place into their bowls. I was very moved by the hordes of people gathered together to participate in this ritual as an act of generosity and making merit. Since the monks had just finished leading chanting in the temple, the alms round was a powerful representation of reciprocity and giving, which strengthens relationships and communities. These embodied experiences of being surrounded by a culture of generosity at these temples really impacted me to become more thoughtful and kind in my own life and incorporate these values in the work I am creating, especially when considering that our work is seen by communities, not just a singular teacher. I know that I'm still working on becoming more intentionally kind in my everyday life, but the very act of gifting fruit or providing monetary donations to these temples has served as a reminder of my commitment to generosity and giving back to communities that have so kindly welcomed us into their spaces.
The first cohort of L2BB students graduate. Andy continues to visit several of the local temples with his family, which has expanded with the addition of a baby daughter. Before working with the second cohort of high school students, Andy and I co-lead a 6-day immersive with a small group of graduate students and administrators from the Klingensien Center for Independent and International School Leadership at Columbia University's Teachers College. Trent is also in town for some author events for his newly released book of translations, Until Nirvana's Time, Buddhist Songs from Cambodia. We return to American Wisdom Association and Lubini Temple and make new friends at two Lao temples, Wat Buddha Bhavana in Westford and Wat Lao Mixayaram in Lowell. At Wat Buddha Bhavana, Ajahn Dillon, whose parents founded the temple two decades earlier, cheerfully gives us a tour. At Wat Lao Mixayaram, the abbot beckons us to receive string prayer bracelets. We kneel before him one by one as he recites blessing chants. With COVID restrictions lifted, bigger gatherings at temples are possible again. At a Sunday ceremony doubling as a temple fundraiser at Wat Samaki, we're invited to light the candles on the altar and to ladle rice into the alms bowls of the monks alongside the rest of the community members. Any trepidation we might feel as non-Cambodians in this Khmer Buddhist temple melts away into a sense of belonging. While the monks eat, Trent is asked to perform Cambodian Dharma chants in both English and Khmer. We sit on the velvety rug, worn smooth by the passage of feet and knees and years, and listen to the songs. Discussing the experience afterwards, one of the Klingenstein students reflects on how the simple tool of See, Think, Wonder, developed by Project Zero at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, helps us differentiate our observations from our thoughts, from our questions.
What did you notice? Mm-hmm. Go back to that sense, noticing, wondering.
In L2BB, we spend a lot of time looking, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching, while also noting the thoughts, assumptions, and memories that these embodied sensory experiences are evoking for us. This in turn ignites our curiosity, leading to a wealth of questions. Instead of going into the temples and measuring them against the standard of authentic Buddhism that we've constructed in our heads based on textbook reading, our engagement at the temples embraces the lived, living reality that we ourselves are witnessing and shaping in every moment. With the second cohort of L2BB high school students, our relationship with neighboring Buddhists deepens and widens. We return to Chua Tung Van, the MFA, Wat Lao Mixayaram, the Pluralism Project, Wat Boston Buddhavararam. Offering meals to the monks at the Thai temple becomes an L2BB tradition.
Mm-hmm. Manya pati pacharito chitava muhindho Nante shasa pavatite shayamak naranga Nandho pananta puchakam viputam mahiti Ute na kera puchake na tamakayanto Ito pati savitina chitava muhindho Nante shasa pavatite shayamak naranga Ukha natiti puchake na
Ots Jenkins, a student at Harvard Divinity School, arranges for us to meet local Cambodian leaders in Lowell, including community elder Perry Penn and young dance troupe founder Kenneth Moore.
The dance was also beautiful. No one can compare to it.
The staff at the Buddhist Digital Resource Center in Boston demonstrate for us the profound efforts that have gone into collecting, preserving, and disseminating Buddhist texts. On a trip to Quincy to visit Thousand Buddha Temple, a trip made possible by a connection with Venerable Xianfeng, whom the inaugural cohort of L2BB students had met at Harvard Divinity School, we discover a smaller Guanyin Temple just a mile away. Even though we haven't made an appointment, we're invited in, then sent home with oranges and Pringles. Everywhere we turn, the generosity is inescapable, as is the sense of kinship. When the third cohort of L2BB high school students return to Wat Buddha Bhavana, they ask about a set of paintings at the Lao Temple. Ajahn Dillon explains that these are images of the Vasantara Jataka, a famous past-life tale of the Buddha from when he was a prince set on perfecting the virtue of generosity. His generosity is so great, or so excessive, depending on how you view it, that he ends up giving away his kingdom's rain-bestowing elephant, his royal riches, and eventually his two young children and wife. They're all reunited at the end of the Jataka tale, whose multiple twists and turns are often rendered in multiple panel murals. Wat Buddha Bhavana's Vasantara Jataka painting set isn't entirely complete, though, Ajahn Dillon laughingly confesses.
About Vasantara, about Buddhists, about monks, the Buddha himself, like what he had been through before he became a monk, there's different stages, and there's a couple that's missing. Because nothing is permanent.
All things are indeed impermanent. When Andy tells the abbot of Chua Tung Van that he and his family are moving out of state at the end of the school year, Tay remarks, echoing the Buddha's last words, "All conditioned things come to an end." And so, spring 2024 marks the third and final year of listening to the Buddhists in our backyard at Phillips Andover. Andy and his family will be missed, not only at the schools where they teach and learn, but also at the nearby temples where they've become regulars. Having moved from California to Michigan the previous summer, Trent and I are now 2,300 miles closer to Andover. The relative proximity opens up new possibilities. In the previous 2 years, I've done longer residencies in person at Andover with Zoom calls during the interim. This time, there will still be the regular Zoom calls, but my residencies can be shorter and more frequent. Over a span of 8 weeks, I spend 24 days in Massachusetts over 4 separate trips. We kick off this year's Listening to the Buddhists in Our Backyard project with a trip to Chua Tung Van. This time, we rent a school bus, because it's not just the 6 L2BB students who go, but all 20 high school students who are part of their school within a school program. They meet Tam, Tay, and the temple cat, Mickey. Reflecting on the visit afterwards, the students marvel at how quickly they felt at home there. During the 4 weekends that I'm in town, our 8-person L2BB team listens and chants and eats and learns at American Wisdom Association, Wat Buddha Bhavana, Wat Lao Mixiaram, Wat Samaki, and Kurukula, we take our first L2BB trip to Glory, a Cambodian Buddhist temple in Lowell that was founded in 1989 and that we connected to after Andy struck up an unexpected friendship with Lowell's mayor, Sukari Chow. We attend ceremonies at Wat Boston Buddha Vararam. We return to the Pluralism Project and reconnect with Odds at Harvard Divinity School for an astonishing Khmer dance workshop hosted by Kenneth Moore and his dance troupe. We celebrate Lao New Year at Wat Lao Mixayaram, bathing a statue of the baby Buddha inside the temple before heading to the windy outdoors to place colorful flags into sand stupas while a row of seated monks recites blessing chants. Thanks to Venerable Xianfeng's kind invitation, we get a chance to celebrate the Buddha's birthday at Thousand Buddha Temple, chanting and bowing and bathing the baby Buddha, then chanting and bowing some more before the delicious vegetarian lunch. Afterwards, Jason, a devoted regular at Qianfo Si, gives us an in-depth tour of the 34-year-old temple.
Okay, so this is the Guanyin. So this is the Guanyin Bodhisattva. So just now I was like mentioning, if you can see the main figure, there are a lot of hands, correct? And there also, at every single hand, rightfully, there's actually an eye. So Guanyin Bodhisattva have many, many forms that he can actually transform into to teach Dharma and to help people. Now, in one of the sutras, he says that Guanyin has 84 manifestations of the form, and one of the forms is a thousand Buddha, thousand eye, 11.
The nonagenarian abbess of the temple, Venerable Sik Guanyin, shares about Qianfo Si's tenacious origins during a time when Pure Land Buddhists in the area took 5-hour bus rides to New York to find spiritual refuge. Before we leave, she presses braided red blessing bracelets into each of our hands. The 6 students of L2BB 2024 seem humbled to receive this level of care and welcome. What Andy and I don't anticipate is that they will end up visiting local temples even on the weekends when we don't accompany them. They return to Bore Si to chant and chop vegetables. They spend multiple Saturday afternoons at Chua Tung Van with the youth group that Tam founded, joining the elementary to high school age members in a 4-hour stretch of bowing, chanting, meditating, learning Vietnamese, discussing the Dharma, eating snacks, singing songs, and playing games.
And now please listen to the song.
Victoria, nostalgia.
Be the youth group's founder, she is also a participant alongside the younger members. For her, Chua Tung Van's youth group is a place to cultivate the joy, love, and care that are essential to the intertwined practices of learning and teaching.
My family is Buddhist, and I'm lucky, I'm fortunate to be raised in a Buddhist tradition, especially my parents used to be the Buddhist youth leaders as well. So they ingrained in me the love for youth, and serving youth is my joy and inspiration. It is my path of developing and learning. I never considered myself as a teacher, but I consider myself as a lifelong learner, and I'm open to learn from even a young kid, from adults, from anybody who come to our temple. You know, cultivating your peace, your inner peace is very important. If you want to change the world, first change yourself, right? Like, if you're joyful, if you are at peace, you can influence that energy to others. And I felt like, yes, it is really helpful and it's really great. And, you know, it's also helped me to make some transformation of my own life, right? Like my habit energy.
Zhuo Dengwan's youth group members are simultaneously learners and teachers as they support each other in cultivating these habit energies of joy and peace.
Dear Sangha, brothers and sisters, now we will start our practice today with the sitting meditation session. Please sit on your cushion, cross your legs, and put your right hand on top of your left hand. Keep your back upright, relax your shoulders, and close your eyes slightly. Sitting meditation is a way of returning home to give full attention and care to ourselves. Like the image of Buddha on the altar, we too can radiate peace and stability. The purpose of sitting meditation is to enjoy, so please relax. Feeling joy, I breathe in. Feeling happy, I breathe out. In, feeling joy. Out, feeling happy.
In one of our many post-temple visit van ride debriefs, Andy highlights the transformative potential of learning when it is rooted in joy and connection.
This idea of joy and enjoyment of meditation, I think sometimes meditation can be presented or taken on in such extremely serious or severe, intense ways, as opposed to this practice of friendship or self-friendship.
In Tam's view, this practice of joyful spiritual kinship realizes the highest potential in each and every one of us.
For the youth, we teach them by example. We guide them by love and care. We call each other brother and sister, or spiritual brothers and sisters. Mm. They find joy, you know, for the kid. If somebody just lectures, they would quit or they would give up on going to the temple. So it is really a place for them to bond with each other, and they call this place as the second home. It took us time to prove to them that over here, we don't just only teach Vietnamese language. We also provide a kit with many other skills or help them to form a healthy and wholesome lifestyles that can help you navigate life, how to take care of their emotional storms or take care of their internal conflicts and even external conflicts in a family or in school and things like that based on the Buddha teaching.
Parents are not necessarily devout Buddhists.
Right. Mm-hmm. They are not necessarily to be. And some of them, the parents, became more devout Buddhists thanks to their children. So you don't have to be a Buddhist to find the joy or to practice the Buddha teaching. Because Buddha say like, oh, everybody has the Buddha nature or everybody is the Buddha to be. So if we recognize that, and then we can cultivate those seeds, the Buddhahood within ourselves.
Interviewing Tam at Chua Tung Van during the week of our third year L2BB students' online and in-person presentations, I ask for her reflections on the project as an indispensable member of the L2BB team over the past 3 years.
At the beginning, I was surprised that the high schoolers could have this kind of course, right? Especially deep learning in Buddhism, especially through their experiences. And I was so impressed. Yeah, I was impressed with the way that you and Andy provided to the kids so that they could come and experience a lot of Buddhist communities in the Merrimack Valley. When the students came here and the teachers came here, I remember I invited everybody to practice mindful breathing. Do you remember that? And it was so great. I found this serene energy and positive energy right away after one or two mindful breathing with you all. The second thing is I'm really impressed with the way that the students work really hard. Students of L2BB who came here, they were so dedicated in practicing, in interviewing, working, listening to people and working with people. Like they join our practice on Wednesday or on Saturday, and they prepare very profound questions to ask me and to ask the Abbot Meng and some Buddhist members here. That was really inspiring. And thanks to that, I found that, wow, you could provide your students with knowledge, but like not just knowledge, the motivation for them to learn and deepen their learning, deepen their understanding of Buddhism, right? I really admire you and Andy, honestly, because of your guidance, because of your insights. When I came to attend the presentation of the students, I was so impressed. I was so grateful as well for the professionalism and the positive vibe that the students provided to us in these presentations. Yeah, a lot of great memories now lively coming back in my mind. Like the trip, the field trip that I joined you all to Harvard University School of Divinity, also some other temples as well. That was very beautiful, very beautiful. I saw that from you, like I saw that from Andy. You're really patient with your students and very flexible. Yeah, your facilitators, real facilitators, and also great advisors, but you don't impose your opinion on your students, but you let them think and choose their way of expressing themselves. And that is a very important thing that I've learned from you and Andy, the teachers of L2BB. From the students, I really admire them, the way that they work hard and they take responsibilities in their role as a student who would love to learn and experience through this course. So that is really inspiring to me. And I apply something into my teaching and also into my youth program as well, that I would love to provide them more opportunities for them to express themselves in the project.
Humble as always, Tam doesn't mention the ways that her steady and joyful guidance of the L2BB students has expanded their understandings of Buddhism, their relationship to learning, and their aspirations for the future.
Personally, Buddha's teaching of the 84,000 Dharma doors is becoming clearer to me through cooking and food. I see now that the upstairs practice that we do, meditating, Dharma talks, chanting, can help support how we approach Dharma in the rest of our lives. Master Sheng Yan said it the best, "Bai niao zai shu, bu ru yi niao zai shou," which means that 100 birds in the tree is not worth one bird in your hand. So while trying to chase the Buddhist practices that might seem normative, like meditation, we forget about the Dharma doors that we perhaps are more attuned to. Meditation is very hard for most, is very hard for me personally. And eventually, the Dharmic path leads to the same place, So why take the long way there? As I conclude this presentation, I'd like to implore you all to consider your own Dharma doors in life. Whether you're familiar with Buddhism or not, maybe try to notice the activities in your life that give you the ability to empty out all emotions and attachments and take refuge in them. Because in chasing the Dharma doors that seem flashing, we perhaps will lose sight of the ones that we have.
In 2021, I published Be the Refuge, Raising the Voices of Asian American Buddhists, hoping that university students and scholars might use the book in their classes. But it was high schoolers who taught me that refuge, like learning, cannot be confined within classroom walls and can connect people of all ages and backgrounds. The day after the final L2BB student presentation in May 2024, Trent, Andy, his family, and I met at Chuatungban Temple to take refuge under the guidance of Tay and Tam. May all of us find the doorways to liberation that we seek. May we cultivate kinship wherever we go with gladness and gratitude.
And now, the ordinaries, brothers and sisters, now you can sit on your cushion and palm your hands, join your palms, and listen attentively. Today, the community has gathered to give support to those who will vow to go for refuge to the three jewels and receive and practice the two promises and the five mindfulness trainings. You have had the chance to learn the vow and observe the way of understanding and love that has been handed down to us by teachers over many centuries, and today you have made the decision to go for refuge to the three jewels. So now, upon hearing the sound of the bell, please stand up, bow deeply three times to show your gratitude to the three jewels.
Amen.